Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back here to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today. It's Friday, November 16th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us here at Normal. Help us end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to make your donation or join Normal today. Folks, we can legalize marijuana. Find out more about it at norml.org. Got a great stash for you this Friday, a stash to last all weekend. First, we're going to speak with Alan St. Pierre today, Normal's executive director. We're going to talk about the marijuana eradication program out in California. They've seized double the number of plants as last year in this program. Really kind of a staggering, you know, in the millions numbers. They're touting it as a record high. But what does that really mean for the marijuana market in the United States? Some interesting stuff out there for sure. Alan joins us today, and he'll be back here on the Audio Stash Monday to talk about a recent New York Times blog article he was involved with debating marijuana prohibition in the United States. So Alan St. Pierre today and on Monday. Also today, our CelebsDonor.com update. We'll speak with Steve Bloom in a very interesting interview today. We'll speak about Norman Mailer. Mr. Bloom has some personal experience with Mailer, so we'll talk about that today in our Friday, our regular Friday CelebsDonor.com update. Also, some great music today. We had some cake yesterday. We'll have some cake today. Cake is always good in two slices, I think. And the good obscure B-side, we got a cool track today called Thrills. And also from the Independent Online Distribution Alliance, we've got some Ween here today. We'll have some comedy, some music here in our Friday stash. In a fall Friday stash, don't worry, we'll have audio stash specials next week for Thanksgiving and the day after. We'll have podcasts online, so make sure to share a little audio stash, give a little free stash away through iTunes, and recommend the subscription to the audio stash, Normal News, and Normal Events for the holidays, and tell your friends and family about marijuana law reform. Let's get to our first segment here today with Alan St. Pierre, Normal's Executive Director. Alan St. Pierre is the Executive Director of Normal in Washington, D.C. He joins us today to talk a bit about the marijuana eradication efforts out there and what this really all means. Alan, thanks again for joining us here today. The marijuana eradication effort under the CAMP program in California has essentially doubled its plant seizures this year But there was also a report that showed domestic marijuana cultivation skyrocketing as well. So these seizures, although the DEA and other agencies tout them, really are just a drop in the bucket, it seems.
Well, my easy, pithy, two-word reply to any time the government goes out and tries to massively eradicate cannabis is price support. There's a reason why an ounce of dried vegetable matter in this country retails between $200 and $500 an ounce. A barrel of oil today, 50 gallons of oil, is retailing for $100 for 50 gallons of it. So it speaks to the absurdity of trying to go out and eradicate a plant material. Yes, indeed, the CAMP program has been going on for now almost 30 years. It has had sort of some upward and downward curves. The last 4 years, it has been a decidedly almost straight-up curve. I believe it's been a 600% increase in marijuana plant eradication in California since 2003. And, well, it could be tied to the fact that the state has the largest and most viable commercial medical marijuana industry. It could be the fact that the more agents and the more technology that is committed to trying to find the cannabis out in the fields and out in the mountains and valleys, the more that's committed out there, the more that they find. It doesn't mean that there was any less for the last three decades, just simply more people are out there literally beating the bushes trying to find this stuff. But from a national perspective, which is from Normal's point of view, it is the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, when you mention a drop in the bucket, yeah, not only is it a drop in a bucket, it is a drop in an absurd bucket to the extent that 95 to 96% of all cannabis that is eradicated outdoors in the United States is in fact not marijuana as you and I would recognize it to be. It is, ironically, the leftover feral ditchweed from the hemp stock of the 1940s through 1945 World War II effort. And so because of genetic testing, one can find that those plants today have migrated all over the central United States. And so when we look at these 200, 400, in some years, 700 million marijuana plant eradications outdoors, in all years going back to 1975, 95% of the marijuana eradicated in our country is in fact industrial hemp that is legal in Canada, all of Europe, and most of Asia. And so, yes, California, absolutely, along with Kentucky, Tennessee, Hawaii, Oregon, Washington, some states that grow cannabis that most of us would recognize as such, but frankly, from a national point of view, the outdoor eradication program is a total failure in that it eradicates a plant that is actually legal and subsidized throughout most of the world in the form of industrial hemp.
Now, they do spend a fair amount on the helicopters and other devices to try and find outdoor growing marijuana and rip them up as well.
Well, they absolutely commit a lot of time and technology to look for the stuff, but they rarely make any arrests associated with it. By the time the police ever make their way to the patch, even in the cases where individuals are tending the patch, they hear the helicopters, they can hear the small army approaching, and they get out of there, they amscray. And it is rare that police ever arrest individuals associated with even 20, 30, and 50,000 plant counts. The other night I was watching a rerun of In Pot We Trust, which was on, I think, Showtime or one of the other cable networks, and you know, here are they went and busted what they thought was going to be a 1,000-plant garden in a small little riverine valley in Southern California, and 5 hours into it, they realized there was a 20,000-plant operation, and when they got there, they found the little encampment. They walked over, and there was fresh produce and other things that were still cool from the cooler, and I mean, whoever was there just simply grabbed the goods and left, and so they busted nobody. Yes, they took the contraband off the street, but the cost of 20 or 30 officers up there all day long, helicopters going back and forth, eradicating the plant. And by the way, when they load up these huge, huge plant counts and put them into these big nets and fly them up and out of these areas, gee whiz, What do you think they're doing for the next year? They're just basically seeding. If the plants have gone to seed, as they can often do, they've basically put tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of seeds out, coming out of the netting as they go and bring them to what are called the burn sites or the lockup areas. And so in some ways it's just sort of a self-perpetuating law enforcement endeavor that does not put any dent into the market in the United States. At best, when one looks at the 50-state breakdown, yes, a place like Hawaii, which has a very small, limited land space, but obviously it's an island state, that there, the government claims to get 40 to 50% of the crop. And maybe they're right, because there's such a limited land space, they can actually monitor a fair amount of it. But in most of the country, frankly, they rarely get more than 3, 5%, and that's their estimates. They really don't do anything more than when you and I, on occasion, might go and buy cannabis, and we pay more for that than we do gold bullion. It is because of law enforcement endeavors to try to go out and eradicate it.
Well, and again, domestic production has increased such that the federal government was even predicting a price cut in marijuana this year. Perhaps the stepped-up eradication efforts are, again, price equalization, as you mentioned early on.
Yeah, well, because you're right, that the NDIC, National Drug Intelligence Center, has put out this report this week indicating that there's such a glut of marijuana in both America and Canada that the prices likely will come down, which, by the way, goes against one of the seven major goals of the government's stated purpose of prohibition, and that is to increase the price of the price of these products so that fewer people will go out and buy them.
Very, very interesting stuff, Alan. And it looks like as the year is winding down, there's been a lot of reform. The election last week was very interesting, and it looks like 2008 is going to be a really hot year for reform in general.
2008, without a doubt, is going to be the hottest year for a lot of different reasons. One, the maturation of the baby boomers, their philanthropy towards drug policy reform, their influence over politics, the internet and the increase of communication and networking technologies, the fact that there will be likely 4 to 5 states next year that will be voting on either medical marijuana or decriminalizing marijuana is absolutely going to make 2008 the most visible year for marijuana law reform in the almost 4 decades it's been going on.
Well, Alan, very, very interesting stuff out there. Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal, he joins us today from Washington, D.C. He'll be back here on the Audio Stash Monday to talk about a Freakonomics blog at the New York Times, where he debated a number of prohibitionists about marijuana prohibition and policy in America recently. That'll be on Monday's Audio Stash. Make sure you tune in every day.
What's up, guys? This is Ms. High Times 2007, and you're chilling with us here at the Normal Podcast.
Have you ever wondered what Amsterdam is all about? Don't just read about the culture that has accepted cannabis. Experience it firsthand with CS Travel's Sensible Amsterdam Tour with Normal. Travel to one of Europe's most beautiful cities this January for an educational and recreational visit to a city that regulates cannabis like alcohol. CS Travel has arranged an exclusive visit for reform-minded Americans that includes a private tour of some of Amsterdam's most renowned coffee shops, educational seminars with coffee shop proprietors, local law enforcement, members of the Cannabis Retailers Association, and Normal staff. Entertainment includes a special evening at the Boom Chicago Comedy Club, canal tours, visits to the city's many museums, including the world-famous Van Gogh Museum. Don't just wonder about Amsterdam, experience the beauty and freedom of this unique city firsthand with CS Travel and Normal Sensible Amsterdam Tour. Pricing information is available online at coffeeshoptravel.com. That's coffeeshoptravel.com. Or call toll-free at 800-816-1846. That's 800-816-1846. Be a sensible American. Visit Amsterdam with CS Travel and Normal this January. Call 1-800-816-1846 right now to book your trip. More information is available at normal.org. Now it's time for our CelebStoner.com update every Friday here on the Audio Stash.
I want to be famous. I want to wear minks and satins and pearls.
Steve Bloom joins us each Friday here on the Audio Stash for our CelebStoner.com update. Steve has his finger on the pulse of celebrity stoners around the planet, and he posts it all in Marijuana News up at CelebStoner.com. Steve, welcome back here to the show today.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
Doing very well this week, Steve. Very much looking forward to the weekend. And starting off at CelebStoner.com today, an interesting culmination of a story you followed all year here. Ricky Williams reinstated to the NFL.
Yeah, that's big news. I mean, Ricky Williams has had a lot of problems. Everybody probably knows about, you know, his four failed drug tests, his marijuana smoking, his sojourn to India and return to a yoga institute in California. He played up in Canada last year when he was suspended. So he petitioned, and his agent petitioned the NFL to reinstate him. It took a little while to figure it out, but they agreed to reinstate him this week. What's interesting is that the team that he's going back to, the Miami Dolphins, a team that he had left at one point or had been suspended from, had said, the new coach, Cam Cameron, had said he didn't want Ricky on his team. But this was back over the, during training camp over the summer. And now they need a runner because they've had some injuries. So all of a sudden, you know, they need Ricky Williams. So Ricky's not going to play on Sunday, but he's scheduled to play his first game, I believe a Monday night game. I think it's November 26th, and he's going to, you know, get his career back and up and running and literally. And, you know, he should do well. They're going to be on him. You know, I think one more failed drug test and he's suspended for life. So he's got to be real careful, and if he is going to smoke pot, he better mask it really well.
Very interesting with Ricky there. It'll be fun to watch what happens next with him, frankly. Also, Steve, let's talk about author Norman Mailer, who sadly passed away. I know you have some personal experience with Mailer and his son. Mailer was never shy about talking about marijuana.
Well, you know, first of all, Norman Mailer was, you know, the greatest American living writer, you know, until he passed away last week at the age of 84. So he's had a nice long life. And, you know, Mailer came up in the, you know, his first novel was published in the late 40s. And he came up really, you know, as an important, you know, writer in the 50s in America. And, you know, that was the era of the beat, you know, culture. And although he was not, you know, a beat writer, so to speak, you know, like a Jack Kerouac, a little too old for that group. But nevertheless, you know, he embraced marijuana like they did. And he saw it as, you know, kind of a looking glass, you know, to learn more about the world and about yourself. And he really embraced it. He came to a point where he stopped smoking marijuana probably as he got a little bit older. But he, you know, he wrote about it, and he was quoted, you know, numerous times talking about marijuana in all kinds of places, whether it be like Rolling Stone or any number of websites. I'm trying to look for like one particular quote. I used to be a heavy marijuana smoker in the 50s. I loved it. But one paid a heavy price for it. It could leave you good for nothing for 2 days. Finally, he gave it up. He said hadn't had a stick of pot in 10 years. He referred to it as existential. One's condition of marijuana is always existential. One can feel the importance of each moment and how it is changing one. One feels one's being. One becomes aware of the enormous apparatus of nothingness. The hum of the hi-fi set, the emptiness of pointless interruption. And he went on with stuff like that. You know, he's that kind of writer. So, you know, here's someone who, you know, was not, as you say, shy about, you know, talking about marijuana. And interestingly, later in his life, only in the last few years, his youngest son, John Buffalo Mailer, came to work at High Times when I was still working there. So I met John, got to know him very well. He's a great guy. And also met Norman twice. One time Norman came up to the office for a visit. He was hobbling on crutches. He had had some operations, but he was very sweet and very talkative to everybody, you know, as he walked around and visited. I also went to a reading that he did for one of his last books at a Barnes & Noble here in New York and met him there. So I have a very soft spot for Norman Mailer just personally because I had met him and he was,
you know, just a great person, you know, in and of itself, in addition to, you know, his, you know, many things that he accomplished. I mean, he was, you know, famous for being, feisty. He got into, spats and, you know, physical and verbal fights with, many of his colleagues, including Gore Vidal. He took on everybody. He was a short guy, stocky, and he loved, I think he saw himself as like a boxer, you know, he kind of wrote like that, and he loved Muhammad Ali, and he wrote books about Marilyn Monroe, and, I would say the Executioner's Song is my favorite of all his books. It's his, one of his later books, the book about Gary Gilmore and capital punishment that he kind of like, you know, did the style, the Truman Capote style of merging fact and fiction and writing, you know, he won a Pulitzer for that one, and I always thought that was one of his greatest, you know, works. So, you know, anybody out there, you know, who, you know, younger, you know, people out there who haven't been introduced to Norman Mailer, that might be a good way to get into him by, you know, picking up Executioner's Song and just read, you know, Mailer. He was one of the greats.
And do you think his discussions of marijuana and his life experience with it will, you know, be a part of the standard Mailer legacy and memorial?
Comes up a little bit, you know, I mean, I think they just, you know, refer to it as one of the many things, you know, that kind of added to his kind of classic reputation, you know, that he did things, you know, before others. And also another thing he did was he was the co-founder of the Village Voice, you know, one of the first alternative, not the first alternative, you know, weekly publication in America, you know, still going strong here in New York. You know, he founded that paper with several others. He also ran for mayor of New York with Jimmy Breslin in 1969. You know, he ran on the campaign to turn New York into the 51st state of America, which was not a bad idea considering the large population and the problems New York has with its upstate, you know, portion of the state of, you know, that like New York City tends to be fairly liberal in the rest of New York State as you go farther north and, of course, up to Buffalo and places like that gets to be pretty conservative. And he figured, hey, let's separate, you know. It was kind of a brilliant idea. But, you know, his discussions on marijuana come up, you know, quite a bit. Another comment he said, the emotion involved, was he said, he goes, the process, the emotions evolved and why the effects of marijuana are more conducive to editing than writing. So for a writer out there, he's basically saying it was better for editing than as a writer. He had just lots of interesting comments about marijuana. And then he's got a funny one, kind of a tail end of a comment where he goes, he said, sex on pot was fabulous. He thinks it detached him from the other person. He was critical of modern day pot smokers whom he compares to religious fundamentalists. There's too much dead ass in the thinking of pot smokers now. So he's critical as well. I think as he got away from it, he kind of looked back at it and he kind of, you know, maybe he was a little bit, you know, poking a little bit at the smokers, you know, which he, of course, was one of. But, you know, as he got older, I guess he was allowed.
Well, really just a fascinating relationship between Mailer and marijuana, and really just an amazing relationship he continues to share with us all as an author. Steve, also this week at celebstoner.com, you have some more images of Senator Norm Coleman of Minnesota. And this is this denial of his hippie activist and somewhat stoner past has really become a running issue for him.
Well, when Norm Kent, you know, one of the Normal Board of Directors, you know, came forward with a letter that he basically submitted to Celeb Stoner, which we published, it was an open letter to Norm Coleman. And Norm Coleman is the Minnesota Republican senator, first term senator, and Norm Kent went to college with Norm Coleman at Hofstra University in New York back in the late 60s. And, you know, both of them were rabble-rousers. I mean, Norm Kent certainly is, you know, today as he continues, you know, his efforts to legalize marijuana and other things that he's involved in. But, you know, Norm Coleman, you know, went a completely opposite direction. It's kind of an interesting story. You know, somebody should really write a lengthy, you know, feature magazine piece on the two Norms and how, you know, one guy went this way and one guy went another way. They were both, you know, student activists and radicals, you know, back then against the Vietnam War, pot-smoking hippies, you know, basically. And Norm Kent was upset that he had seen some comments from Norm Coleman regarding marijuana and, you know, how he was anti-marijuana in general, which, you know, comes with pretty much the Republican territory or pretty much the territory of most politicians. But he, you know, saw a form letter that was sent out to a constituent, and he went into a long, you know, song and dance about why marijuana should remain illegal and how it's bad for you. And, you know, Norm just saw that, Kent saw that as the ultimate in hypocrisy. Here was a guy who smoked plenty of it when he was in college, and look where he is today. He's a Republican senator, and yet, you know, he's telling people, oh, you know, this is a bad thing. Well, how bad was it for him? You know, the only thing that, you know, the good thing for him is that nobody knew about it, you know, and it didn't get in his way, you know, of getting elected. But now everybody knows, thanks to Norm Kent. And so Norm Kent continues to dig up cool photos. And some of the photos that we ran back in June and July of Norm Coleman from Hofstra University and from the yearbook, black and white shots with long-haired Norm Coleman, you know, with a bullhorn or, you know, with at a rally. And so he sent something, yet another photo from a 1969 yearbook from Hofstra that was dated back to 68. And Coleman has a megaphone. He has a microphone. He's got long hair, a bomber-type leather jacket. And there's a photo right next to it with a student posting up a sign that says strike. So apparently, you know, Norm was leading the strike. Whatever it is they were striking about, I gather it was about the Vietnam War, because that was pretty popular back then to sort of have strikes on campus against the war and get people to leave their classes and come out onto the, you know, the campus area and, you know, have a rally. So I presume that's what was going on then. So, you know, thanks to Norm Kent, you know, we decided to run that one. And honestly, it didn't really get the kind of pickup that that the previous Norm Coleman stories had. Maybe people are a little tired of Norm Coleman, and they're moving on, or maybe the debates and everything that's going on, you know, now leading towards 2008 presidential campaign has kind of slowed down people's interest. But who knows, maybe thanks to this program and some other publicity, the word will get out, and that, you know, there's just more to know about Norm Coleman than meets the eye.
Very interesting stuff. And, of course, Norm Kent here on the program as well, talking about Senator Coleman, the battle of the norms there from Hofstra University. Very interesting stuff, Steve. You know, and also the Queens of the Stone Age, they got kicked out of rehab. I this is right on the top of celebstoner.com today, and you got to wonder about all that. Tell me what happened here.
The Queens of the Stone Age, you know, really, you know, fun rock band out of Southern California led by Josh Homm, had a gig in, of all places, a rehab facility last week. They haven't really stated where this was, and it just sounds like a hoot in a sense that, you know, here's a band that that's never been too shy about its drug use, you know, playing at a rehab center. Like, they must have set up a stage somewhere, and they're a loud band, so I can't imagine, you know, what type of stage. I mean, you know, it would have to be kind of like a club gig at a rehab facility. Well, anyway, they break into their, to lead off their set, they break into Feel Good Hit of the Summer, which, you know, repeats over and over. Pretty much the only words in the song are nicotine, Valium, Vicodin, marijuana, ecstasy, and alcohol. And then later on, after they say that numerous times, they go, cocaine. So it's just, you know, like a laundry list of drugs, presumably drugs that, you know, they did and, you know, lots of people have done, marijuana included. And they went into this song, which obviously goes over and over, repeats it over and over and over again, and they were cut off mid-song and just, like, bum-rushed right out the door of the center, apparently. They were just like, you guys are out of here. What are you doing, you know? So, I mean, as if they didn't know, you know, it's just, it's almost like a goof. It's almost like a fake news story. Like, you can't make that kind of thing up. But apparently it's true. You know, I haven't had any verification of, like, where. The story broke actually in the New Music Express over in England, and it got picked up around the web, you know, a little bit this week, so we picked it up and ran it as Celeb Stoner. You know, well, interestingly, Josh Homm, who appeared in High Times last year, said about his drug use that he used to get high a lot. I don't anymore because I know too much. My brain would take off. I've done too many bad things. Yeah, like playing a rehab center. So, you know, that's, you know, it's just too much. You know, whoever, you know, decided to book them, you know, should be the ones that got thrown out of the center, not, you know, Queens of Stone Age. But I would have loved to have been there, and I look forward to any other report from anybody who was there who could verify this actually happened.
booted out of rehab. It truly is surreal in California. Yeah, exactly. Who does the booking at the rehab centers? That's what I want to know. Are they going to get baby shambles next? Well, Steve, man, this has been a great conversation as always. I really appreciate you taking time each Friday to join us here on the Audio Stash.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thanks again, man. Steve Bloom is the man with his finger on the pulse of celebrity stoners around the planet. He posts it all. And marijuana news up at celebstoner.com, and he joins us here on the Audio Stash each Friday. Stay tuned. We got some great music coming up next.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
And our music today. Well, we got some cool stuff. Our second slice of the B-sides from Cake up on the Independent Online Distribution Alliance. I think we finally got those images and links up. The IOTA was down yesterday when we wanted to post the link, so some Cake today. We have links to their IOTA account at normalaudiostash.com. This tune, a really cool little track called Thrills.
Man is born, man lives, man dies, and it's all vanity. And that's about the way it is at the merry-go-round. You get on. You go around. Standing in the saddle. Man is born. Man lives. Man dies. Tried thrills. He said, I gave myself to enjoy pleasure. What are teenagers doing today? They're trying every thrill there is in the books. We got colored TV, but it still isn't satisfying. Born, man lives, man dies, and it's all vanity. You can't understand it, it's going so loud and so forth, and they're wiggling and wobbling around and everything else, and yet they're not satisfied, and these disc jockeys, they hear the tone that is different. Man is born. Man dies, and it's all vanity. You can't understand it, it's going so loud, so forth, and they're wiggling and wobbling around and everything else, and yet they're not satisfied, and these disc jockeys, they hear the tune that is different.
Cake with Thrills here on the Audio Stash. That came from the Independent Online Distribution Alliance. We have links to Cake right up on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. And when I was hunting around for music this week, I came across those Cake B-sides, and I also found a track from Ween, a kind of a local Delaware Valley band. Guys formed up in New Hope, Pennsylvania, and they are super hometown favorites. Can't tell you how popular Ween is in this area, around the country, and around the world. So I was totally psyched to find a track we could play on the podcast here today. They're on tour. They're going to be playing around in the East Coast and also down south here coming up very quickly. We have links to them at normalaudiostash.com. This track was up at the Independent Online Distribution Alliance. Here's Ween with Your Party. And this goes out to a huge Ween fan and a helper here on the Audio Stash, Rupert Kennedy.
candy and spices and tricolored pastas. The meat carved was drawn from succulent juices, served on platters of the purest gold. I was calm when we arrived at the party.
Listening to Pod Safe Music on Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Historical Double Entendres presents Thomas Jefferson.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with... Damn, pen ran out again. Where did I put that inkwell? Sally Hemmings, can you show me a convenient place to dip my pen?
This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. If you listen to the Audio Stash, vote for us at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. Everyone have a fun weekend out there, and we're back at 4:20 on Monday. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.